What up, everybody? This is Double G for the Fight Game Podcast here on a late Monday, early Tuesday. We're doing two shows this week. And the main reason is because by the time we do our normal show, Revolution will kind of be, you know, if people have forgotten it. Well, they may not have forgotten it, but everyone have already had their takes. We wanted to get our take in a little early. So we're going to do a recap in a different way. We're not going to just go match by match. We'll do our recap. And I also recorded a pretty fun discussion about Triple H and WWE and Vince McMahon with my buddy Kyle the Boss Ross. And if you remember the Crazy Like a Fox book on Brian Pillman that came out about 5 years ago, the author, Liam O'Rourke, he does some audio and he has some podcast stuff, and he and Kyle do a show together. And so I was like, you know what? I kind of want to talk to Liam O'Rourke, partially because John and I are doing this WCW 96 podcast on the Fight Game Media Patreon. And he wrote the book on Pillman, and we've been talking about Pillman. So I wanted to kind of dig deeper on the Pillman story. We're going to save that for the Patreon, which will come up tomorrow, Tuesday, but depending on when you're listening to this, on the Patreon. That it's about a 35-minute interview with Liam and Kyle, specifically on Pillman. And then we'll take, I did a second half, and that will be on the second half of this show. So after John and I get done with our AEW stuff, it's a very lively discussion on Vince McMahon and Triple H. And the craziest thing, as we're talking about Triple H, and Kyle, I think, in the interview says something like, and Vince could literally just come back right now. And then word came out a couple hours after we're done recording. Guess who's at Raw today? Vince McMahon. So it's kind of funny. I thought that was pretty good timing. All right. So I wanted to do a couple of shout outs because John and I got to spend some time with some people on Wednesday. We mentioned that. I also got to spend some time with our good friend Richard Becerra. He came out from San Antonio. He wanted to see the Cow Palace. So we hung out on Friday at Rampage. I wish he got a better show for his only Cow Palace experience. And then we hung at Revolution. So great to see Richard. My buddy Dan Chang, who is the Daycon MC on the F4W board. I have no idea if he's posted in 10 years, but that is his username. He's been to previous F4W conventions, but he was the one who kind of got us all together and wanted to get the tickets. And I had a lot of fun because I hadn't seen him, and I'd seen him in the last year, but we hadn't hung out and watched wrestling in a long time. So that was fun. Dan Chang, thanks for doing that. And also my Giants podcast with my buddy Brad Evans, we've had the San Francisco Giants sound engineer, the radio engineer for the broadcast. His name is Darren Chang. Who knew he was a Giant wrestling fan and a huge Dave Meltzer fan? He has subscribed to The Observer for longer than I have. And so Darren came and hung out with us to watch Revolution as well. So it was really fun hanging out with Darren. That's the first time I've hung out with him in person. I've talked to him before, but so that was fun. So just want to mention all those folks. And then, you know, the folks from F4W who came out. Brian Alvarez came out. Got to say hi to Brian. JJ Williams, who does the social media and takes all the pictures. Corey was out. We got to hang out with Corey a little bit. And Jeremy, of course, was hanging out with us as well. And then Paul Fontaine was covering UFC in Las Vegas on Saturday night. Flies in the morning on 3 hours of sleep to hang out and do San Francisco for AEW Revolution.
He's a madman, that Paul Fontaine.
And then on his flight back, like, I think he just like gambling or something. I forgot what he was saying, but
he was already after the Revolution pay-per-view. He's already on the phone talking to the Boom.
Oh, is that what he did?
Yeah, he's called a special call in. I was listening this morning.
That's awesome.
Shout out to the boys, the Boom.
Yeah, because I dropped him off at the airport, so he would have had to do it from the airport after I'd already dropped him.
He's like, right when I leave the Garrett, I'm going to bury you, and that's what he did. And then he, not scared.
That would be awesome.
It was awesome. Like Kevin Ely is like, James, I got a call in, I got a special Boom, and There he was, you know, the old phone audio, and so it was cool, man. I was digging it.
So. All right, so let's talk about this show. Got all the hellos and thank yous and shout outs in. So last week when we talked about this, we said, what is the score out of 10 that we were going to give this show? In our feeling going in, as far as the hype is concerned, how excited were we? And we both gave it a 7. We said, that's our interest level, 7 out of 10. What was the, after you were done watching, did it match the interest level? Was it higher than the interest level? Was it lower? How did you feel after that pay-per-view was over?
Oh, exceeded my original interest level. You know, if I was going to rate from a 1 to 10, shoot, I think I'd get this a 9.5.
Really. Wow.
Yeah, really enjoyed this show. Really enjoyed this show.
And so you saw, and the reason why we're doing it this way is because John obviously saw the pay-per-view version, and I have not watched the pay-per-view. I was just there live. And I just wanted to compare our perspectives. And what did you, so from the, now, one of the issues that we usually have with Dynamite is the style of wrestling isn't necessarily our favorite style of wrestling. In some cases, like, you're really down on it, especially when it comes to some of the lucha matches or the high spot matches that you don't think fit the storytelling or psychology as they should. When it came to the actual in-ring, what did you think of the in-ring? Were you impressed with the in-ring? Did it vary from match to match? Like, what were your thoughts there?
I was pretty impressed with most of the matches. There was a couple matches that missed a bit for me, but, and this is going to shock everyone that was listening to this podcast, I enjoyed, I don't know if you want to go match by match, but I enjoyed the Elite versus the House of Black. I mean, it was the same kind of match that you always kind of get.
Yeah.
But what we got from the Elite was serious.
Yeah.
There was no clowning around, no goofing off. They were like in a fight between these three badasses and they're trying to survive. You know, no overselling by Matt Jackson where it's like, hey, we're just doing fake wrestling. Honestly, they should have left Brandon Cutler and Nakazawa out of there, even though they were basically invisible, other than like when I saw them out there originally. I thought they were basically invisible for the match, which was good, but I thought they should just left them in the back, you know? So, I mean, was it my favorite match of the night? No, but I was like, it made it more interesting for me as I was able to watch it without getting frustrated because everyone, all six men, were taking it very seriously. So yeah, I mean, so I was like, you know, it was like hitting, like, all that, you know, the opener was good. And then the next match was good, really damn good, actually. And then the sixth, I'm like, okay, here comes this match. This might, you know, put me in the bad mood, but no, it kept going.
Yeah.
So I really enjoyed it. Of course, we had that classic main event. So
absolutely. Okay. So the reason why I asked that is because the main event, the way that main event was built, almost sure that as long as those guys did the match that they were wanting to do, I was pretty sure that was going to be the best match of the night. The whole show is built to peak with this match of the night, right? Yeah, Bryan Danielson, MJF was something to prove. And so I knew that match was going to be really good. But I was really wondering about the corresponding matches. And I'm glad you brought the Elite one up because there was one thing, and this is going to lead into my second question here. There was one thing that I really loved about this show. The crowd, I was worried about this crowd. People, Bay Area didn't really show out for Dynamite, right? Nobody wanted to go to the Cow Palace. Not the greatest building. We talked about this on the last show. Rampage was worse. It was just, Tony Khan was like, "All right, nobody wants to go. You're getting jack crap." Now I'm kidding.
They should have really just taped that same night as.
I mean, it sounds like a lot of the talent flew home after Dynamite and didn't come back until the pay-per-view. So what was left was like a little bit of a skeleton crew, and that was by design, I'm assuming. And so we got what we got for Rampage. That was there's very few times where I go to a wrestling show and I'm like, you know what? I didn't get my money's worth. At Rampage, I absolutely did not get my money's worth for the show that I was hoping to see. And that, you know, that's what happens. And then you learn and you go, okay, maybe that's not the match. Maybe I don't have to go to Rampage anymore if that's how Tony's perspective of what Rampage should be differs that much from what my perspective of what Rampage should be. So that's just something it was a miss. Now, the pay-per-view more than made up for it for me because the crowd was so excited. Mm-hmm. Now that you know that this wasn't Chicago, they weren't standing on their feet, they weren't clapping at everything. You still have to earn their applause in the Bay Area, but they desperately wanted Malakai Black to get something. They saw an individual who has probably been booked underneath what he should have been based off of X, Y, and Z. There's multiple reasons why that may have been it. But that crowd decided, who needs to win this match? It's Malakai Black. And they treated Malakai Black like a giant superstar in the live crowd. And I was like, you know what? I love it when a wrestling crowd is really smart and understands A, sort of where the story's going, and B, who to get behind to enhance this match. And they picked him really early on, going, you know what? We're getting behind Malakai, and he's the guy for us in this match. They still liked Omega and the Bucks. But I was with you. I really loved this match because I thought that the crowd was now there was a this is awesome chant before the match even started. You know, they were just excited, but the crowd was not being disingenuous in their applause. I thought they were really with these guys, and I thought it made the match better. So I'm glad that you brought that match up because that was going to be one of my points was the San Francisco crowd, which I was really worried about. I thought they delivered. And they enhanced the live experience for me.
Yeah, I mean, when it comes to House of Black, I think Malakai Black debuted in AEW, you know, really got a really big strong push with Cody Rhodes, and then just kind of things kind of hit a road bump. I know, so he has some personal issues, whatever, right? Supposedly all that stuff, but you know, like even when they came back, it seemed like they were never really on the show, you know, or hit it on Rampage, which, you know, is like half the audience is watching that compared to Dynamite where they, you know, like, so I think, you know, people were like, hey, these guys are badass and let's do something with them, you know, and it's pretty cool. I like Brody King. He just needs to paint his face more often. Like it's a toy. I like Brody's a big dude. But like
actually wrestled like a big man for once.
Yeah, like he looked really scary, intimidating with that look. So he needs to keep, you know, that I think, you know, some kind of face paint going forward, and maybe he can adjust it per big show, big match, whatever. But yeah, I was really impressed. You know, like I'm happy that the Bucks and Omega took it serious and didn't do their overselling, and you know, Omega oversells a little bit, but it was a very serious tone and. And that's what I liked about it. And, you know, it wasn't offensive and it was easy to watch.
Did you have any thoughts about the live crowd? I don't know how they sounded on television. Well, if they came through or not.
And it seems like AEW always does this. The first match, especially on a pay-per-view and even on a live Dynamite, it's like the audio is always put so high up and the ring announcers, the commentators are very much kind of muffled a bit. So it sounded like extremely loud in the first match. But they're good. They're great. I think they were really invested in the matches, and AEW and these performers gave them matches to be invested in, you know, for the most part. So yeah, I thought they were great. I thought the building looked fantastic on video. Absolutely stunning. It felt like they're in a big building. And it felt like a major show, you know. They should come back just because the look of this pay per view is beautiful.
The building is Major League, and you know I've been saying that like this is a NBA building. Joe Lacob privately financed it. Mm-hmm. It is an ATM machine for the Warriors, and they put a lot of thought, and they just wanted to make the best basketball arena possible. I've seen concerts here. I've seen basketball here. This is the first wrestling show that I saw, and I thought it looked awesome. It was just,
yeah,
it was very impressive.
I know, that's what I was watching. That's what I was really bummed about not being there. I kind of want to be in that building and see it. I never, like, never haven't been yet. So one day soon, but hopefully, you know, if AEW comes back for a pay-per-view, dude, I'll definitely buy a ticket and to be there for that.
All right, let's talk about the main event. I'm assuming you thought this was the best match on the show. Oh, yeah. Yeah. Probably AEW's best match all year so far.
Early contender for match of the year for sure. Yeah, an instant classic. I thought, that was really well laid out. You know, like every Iron Man, there's a, I would say after the first like 15 minutes, there's the bit of a lull from the crowd, right? The crowd's kind of, but then once 30 minutes hit, they're really starting to get into everything. And I thought, you know, MJF was fantastic. Bryan was brilliant. I would have been okay. You know, it was funny to me, like when they went Broadway at first, right? It was tied 3-3.
Yeah.
And the crowd started chanting bullshit. I'm like, well, guys, that's part of the rules. You know, they could go Broadway. Like, which, yeah. You know, and I was like, okay, cool. Cause like I felt like, you know, AEW really does do rematches. So we can do, this definitely can build up to a future match with these guys. But then they went with the sudden death thing. The only thing I tell me what you thought. And I have just two little issues with it. But I do recognize it was a classic and probably one of the best matches of the year, if not going to be the match of the year. I know there's still a lot left in 2023, but it's definitely, I think that this match is definitely going to place very high in those year-end awards when it comes out.
What was the thing?
Well, two things. When they did the the bell rang and their tie and their, and it's a draw. MGF is, you know, he's on the mat. There's the medical crew in there. There's oxygen going on, right? And Tony Khan came off to me like a heel. Here's one of your talent, one of your guys just wrestling the main event. He's nearly, can't catch his breath on the mat. And you're sending Tony Schiavone out there to go, hey, sudden death. This guy's like, no matter if he's a scumbag or not, right? Like, you know, he's still like dying out there, right? So like to me, it made the promotion heal a bit for doing that, right? That's what it looks very odd to me. And then the finish with the oxygen tank, I thought there should have been some kind of bump on the referee. Not a bump, when I say bump, and then everyone say, oh, you bump the referee, the ref's out. He's unconscious and can't see nothing. Mm-hmm. You can bump a referee with the ref he's taken out, so he doesn't see something quickly. You know, like he's out. And I think something should happen there because the way MJF is on the floor and the referee is upwards looking down, you can easily see MJF hit Bryan with the oxygen tank, right? Especially when the little hose flips up in the air and swings and does a little thing. Like, so I thought there should have been a bump there to where the ref is just, you know, down for a bit to where he misses it because the poor referee, who's Bryce Rensburg of all people, has to like act like he can't see that. And I thought that they buried him on that a little bit. But other than that, I mean, I thought all in all it was a classic. I just would have booked that. Someone should have caught that. Of all the things they did great, I thought, how are they going to miss that, you know?
What did you think about, okay, two things about kind of the booking of the falls? So I guess they said, and obviously we didn't hear any of the commentary on the live show, but I guess the graphic said something to the effect of how the falls would happen. Because when the DQ happened, and then all of a sudden, I think the score was like 2-2, and we were like, how did it get 2-2? He just pinned him two times, like right in a row. Mm-hmm. And then we didn't realize that there was a DQ, even though it was blatant. Yeah. So because there was no bell ringing and no announcer going like, one fall to MJ or to Bryan Danielson. So there was confusion
in the live audience.
And then when the wrestler could just go right back and pin him immediately and not be pulled away. Mm-hmm. We didn't realize that until it happened. And then people said, oh yeah, you know, they said something about in the rules or whatever. So that was a little confusing to the live crowd. I just didn't know if that was confusing to the TV.
No, because quickly after the first fall, which is when Bryan Danielson hit the big knee, he quickly said that there's no rest period. So,
okay.
So that, yeah. And so that sucks. You know, I didn't realize that the ring announcer didn't announce. I didn't realize it. I didn't really focus on that. But
the only time we heard the ring announcer was at the 5 minute mark. I think that was the only time.
I thought maybe did he even call 30 minutes or anything? I thought maybe they called 30
remember.
Minutes.
I don't remember calling 30 minutes.
But yeah, that sucks for live audience. They should definitely, you know, that's key. That's key. The ring announcer is key for that live audience and helps them react as like, just kind of. And of course, I know they flash on the screen. They did, right? They flash on the big screen. They
did flash the falls a piece.
Yeah.
It was on the screen. So that's when we saw 2-2. We're like 2-2. It's mm-hmm. The disqualification. That was a disqualification.
Mm. Yeah.
What did you think about? So the story, there's a clear story that you could take advantage of the guy being knocked out and follow mm-hmm. up and no rest period. Danielson taps him out and then he pulls off after he gets the tap. And so then I think it went to, was it? I don't remember what it made it, but he gets the tap out and then he lets go and then he like shakes out an arm and then he goes back in and tries to put the submission on again. I thought maybe he should have held it and see, like, just based on mm-hmm. the story that they seem to be telling, maybe he should have hung on to that submission, at least tried to hang on in that submission throughout the next mm-hmm. fall.
Yeah. 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 That's a good point. Good point on there. The stuff with like the heel trying to get himself disqualified and stuff like that. It's kind of standard with a lot of these Ironman matches. So I knew MJF would do something like that to gain multiple falls by doing something dirty. But I thought it was a freaking fantastic match. So I would have had no freaking doctors in there on MJF. Cause like I said, like that was so awkward. Like I'm like right when your Tony Giovanni was like sitting there, he's getting the call from Tony Khan. Apparently, Tony Khan has not talked to Taz or Excalibur. He only talks to Tony Giovanni. It's like a weirdest thing.
It's like his best friend.
Yeah. And then I'm like, but MJF's dying out there, guys. Like, he's going to, you know, like, I don't know. They could have done. Tony Giovanni comes out there and says there's a sudden death. People, yay. But the doctor's like, you know what? MJF can't go. And they start wheeling him out on a stretcher. And as the camera's focused on him, he goes, winks at him. And then, like, you know, like, oh, this mother, you know, he got away, like, another one. Then you come back with a rematch. That could have happened, too. But I know, the audience was really upset with the draw. But I thought, like, to me, like, I know a lot of people get upset with draws. I love Broadways. You know, they could be used to build three matches.
You know what I thought in the live crowd? Because I thought there was no way they were going to do a draw. Like, if you see me on Twitter, like, the last minute of the match, I'm like, where's Gorilla Monsoon? And and then when the match ended, I think I tweeted something like, he's going to beat him with the super kick. but what I realized? Not everyone has watched that match, WrestleMania 12.
Really?
Because I was like,
younger viewers, I guess?
Well, in our Discord, I was just like, you know, this is just, they're just redoing WrestleMania 12. And then a couple of people said, oh, we've never seen that match. I was like, wow, it's crazy.
No. Yeah, it's kind of crazy considering like Shawn Michaels, Bret Hart, such a legendary rivalry. It's kind of not a great match, but it's still a big match between these two legendary characters. I feel like they would watch that. I'm surprised they probably didn't even watch even Survivor Series was at 92 when they had the.
Yeah.
Not title, but you know, they're true champions. That was a great match, by the way. But yeah, funny. That's interesting.
All right. So what did you think was your least favorite or the worst match or whatever on television? I'm kind of wondering if it vibes with what I saw live.
Least favorite was the four-way tag team match. Just too goofy. Honestly, I really think it should have just simply been the Acclaimed and the Guns for the tag team titles.
You beat the Acclaimed again?
Well, they could still screw them and do something. You know, you could be creative with the finish. And then now the Acclaimed was so hot, so popular. And I just feel like they're just getting, they're cooling off with this booking. And I don't know if it's a smart move. I mean, I don't mind them losing the belts, but like, I still feel they, God, I feel like, I don't know. I'm a little worried about the booking. We'll see how Tony handles them going forward. But even, and I, you know, if you want to shoehorn freaking Jeff Jarrett, Jay Lethal, Danhausen, and Orange Cassidy, like, the pre-show would have been perfect for those guys in a tag match, right? So, I don't know. I mean, I kind of wondered those guys having their contract. They had to do a pay-per-view or something, you know, which, you know, could have kind of handcuffed Tony, but he put that in their contract if that was the case. So, but I didn't gel with that match. It just took me out of it, and it was kind of goofy. It's still, I know the crowd was getting into it, but at home I wasn't into it.
I thought it was fun, but I knew it was going to happen. Pretty much the second that Danhausen was put in that match. I mean, he's put in that match to lose. The FTR sort of non-surprise, I think is what you could call it. They do that very well. People were expecting it. They were waiting for it. We finally got it after not getting it on Wednesday, you know? And then I think I even said this on the podcast. I'm like, man, if they don't give it to us on Sunday, then what the heck is all this BS for?
So it sounds like their contract got extended. FTR?
I've heard that their deal they've had a deal, and that it was just them kind of being goofy.
Could be too, as well. But
whatever it is, that they're obviously,
it's the way Excalibur called it when they came out. They're here to stay or something like that. You know, so I figure they re-upped. But yeah, I got a great reaction, and they're gonna have some good matches. The Guns, I'm looking forward to that. But I feel like the Acclaimed, man, poor Acclaimed right now. You know.
When the Guns beat the Acclaimed, I thought the idea was just to put Acclaimed back on the chase with the chicken shit heels.
Mm-hmm.
And, you know, and then they get them back and, you know, everything's good. But that's obviously not the story that they had in mind.
Yeah. Yeah. I'm thinking, like, what could they do with the Acclaimed? They just feuded with Jeff Jarrett and Jay Lethal. We already been through that. And we don't want to see any more of that. You know, they had some decent matches.
The Bucks?
The House of Black with another Billy Gunn, I guess. Could be something. I can't. I mean, what other heel tag teams do they have? Look at Bush and a Blade. Give me a break. You know, like, Roosh and... The white guy? Cody Vance or whatever. I don't know. I who they have, right? I just feel like they're going to be just twisting the wind, unfortunately.
Well, hopefully Tony creates something for them because you know, maybe they still are, I would imagine they still are, you know, one of your top merch sellers. You know, you want to keep them hot. You don't want to.
Do you feel like Max Caster's raps are getting less edgier as Bayface too, as well?
I think he's got to be a little bit more clever to get some of those lines in. He can't just be blatantly, you know.
Mm-hmm. I don't know. I just felt like his big rap on the pay-per-view was kind of just vanilla for Max, you know. But
yeah. Okay, so let's go through some other sort of big picture stuff as we look at the rest of these matches. To me, Ricky Starks has to take a step forward in this in order for it to make sense. And, you know, Chris Jericho was out there, you know, I think he may have even said it was Baby Huey's interview.
Yep.
I got to talk to Baby Huey and he, you know, talked about that interview a little bit. And I told him, I was like, man, I'm surprised he let you take that picture with him, because he looks like your kid, man. You're so big. And Jericho but Jericho said, you know, I'm not losing to Andretti. Like, I didn't, you know, want to do this to then win over him, like, after. So he's very clearly in, like, how do I make guys? And I guess the question is, is Ricky Starks made from winning this match? And I think maybe that's unanswered because we still have to see where it goes. But did you think that was a performance for Jericho to get Ricky Starks to a higher level?
I thought that was one of the better Jericho performances I've seen in a long time. The key is, though, the real key to make this mean something is the follow-up, is what Starks does next, right? Same thing with Jungle Boy, like, in the match after. Like, okay, these guys got these wins, and it looks like you're building now to this future. You got to keep their momentum going, and we'll see if Tony does that well. And, you know, it's not his strength lately, so we'll see. But that's the key. So, yes, this will mean something if Starks continues to move up and up and, you know, goes higher in the card versus maybe against MJF again in the future, but we'll see.
Speaking of Jungle Boy, what did you think of the casket stuff that they did?
I thought this match, when they announced the final burial stipulation, all that, I thought, oh, God. But you know what? I freaking love this match.
Really?
This might be my second favorite match on the show.
Interesting.
I freaking absolutely loved it. I thought Christian Cage was freaking brilliant. I thought Jack had some freaking intensity finally. He actually He came out fired up. He came up angry. He a little too angry because he didn't have to do that shoot headbutt to freaking Christian Cage. But, you know, they went in the crowd and I thought, oh my God. But you know what? It made perfect sense because Christian, like, this thing kept building and it kept building and it kept building all the way to the end. When the only thing I would have said, hey, instead of like that moment where Jack is like, has a moment and he's looking in the skies, it's like, shut that damn fucking casket, like, with some authority. You know what I mean? Like, just, oh, I wanted to jump on it and fucking roar, you know? Like, that's what I wanted, you know? But other than that little, I mean, I thought the ups and down, the roller coaster ride, the dirt thrown in the eyes of Jack, it was freaking awesome. I love this match, man. It was great. It was absolutely great. 5-star, in my opinion. David, I get it.
did you think that the casket stuff was hokey?
A little hokey, but God, they were so great at it. It didn't hokey when I'm like, at the start for me. By the end, I wasn't thinking hokey.
Now, do you think in the same way, obviously the feud with Christian is to elevate Jack, do you sense that he is now moving on and going to bigger and better things?
I would hope. That's what I would do. I mean, from this on, you have to start. He needs to. These Ricky Starks and Jungle Boy both need wins on Wednesday. Unless they're hurt and they can't work. Yeah. But like, if they're not and they're ready to go, don't put them on Rampage or 400 people are going to see or less. Like, put them on Dynamite. Give them some wins. You know what I mean? Like, just keep it going, both those guys. That's what I would do.
All right, the women's triple threat. I was so the Chase Center, you're basically in your section. I forget what they call them. Portals.
You guys were by the stage, right?
Portals.
You guys were in the stage area? By the stage?
No. So we were not exactly center ring, but off to the right.
Okay.
The ring. But the way that the Chase Center is you go upstairs, and instead of going into like the section or whatever, the old school arena, you'd go and get your food. You're actually put into a bar / restaurant thing, but it's enclosed.
This sounds so, like my favorite place in the world.
So you go up and one of the folks on the Patreon and also who's hung out with us before in Vegas, and he wanted to say hi. So I was like, yeah, I'm going to use the restroom, come back up. I'm going to grab a drink. Let's say hi. And then we were just chatting, but we were both watching the match because they have screens all over this bar area. So we got to see the broadcast version of what they were doing. So I saw the match, but I didn't get to feel the match as far as how the crowd felt or whatever, because I was a little distant from it. But this, you know, going in, this was going to be a hard one, I thought. Ruby Soho, at the end, she turns heel and goes with Saraya and Toni Storm. And, you know, I don't think a lot of people were shocked necessarily. I think we'd sort of seen this one coming for a little while, and they waited until this show. But how was the match as a match for the broadcast?
I was expecting the worst, and it was I would say it was good. Nothing great, nothing special. Exceeded my expectations. And even as it was going on, and as it finished happening, I'm like, you know what? I've seen a lot worse on when it comes to women's matches in AEW than that one, so I can't be disappointed, right? But then I said, uh-oh. I saw it right away, just like you just got some PSD with like Vince Russo booking. You kind of see swerves coming, and then I just right away I'm like, oh, she's turning, and she did. I thought that
I thought she telegraphed it a little bit.
Yeah, and I thought, after the turn, I was like, wait a second. Is this a plan ahead of time? Because there, it wasn't like Tony and Saraya were super shocked themselves. They were like celebrating with her. So if this was a plan, wouldn't the turn just happen right away? And they both just, you know, two on one and to and then maybe, you know, Saraya's the leader. Maybe Ruby Soho is trying to have her win the title, you know, and help her. And maybe they do screw Jamie here to the bell. Hope that's not, you know, I was hoping that wasn't going to happen and it didn't. But, you know, it just didn't make sense. It's like, okay, you wrestled this whole match and then with this, like, you're going to join this group anyways. Like, I don't know. It just was stupid. Why don't you just double team this group?
For the dramatic effect of turning on
it was very,
Jamie Hayter.
It was like very Vince Russo booking. So,
yeah. Okay, so who do you put with the two babyface women's wrestlers to face? Because there's three on the other side now. Is it Sheeta?
Sheeta was the one that they were... was in the mix, and all of a sudden she's disappeared. I don't know what's going on with her. She's hurt or had to go back to Japan or whatnot. Riho's back, so you can kind of throw Riho in there, but I kind of feel like Sheeta was the one that they started all this. So
yeah,
remember that dramatic backstage interview?
And then she threw the stick in the ring.
Yeah, so I would think just for, you know, continuity's sake, it should be Sheeta.
Yeah, yeah. All right, and then... one of the craziest matches you'll ever watch in a U.S. broadcast, John Moxley and Hangman Page. There were bricks. There was barbed wire. There was jumping off of stuff. There was crushing hands and crushing heads with curb stomps on bricks. And then the finish is, and this is a Texas death match. This is the other thing that I don't think was really explained very well to the live audience is Moxley on his own just puts a chain around his neck and he's like walking around like he's the junkyard dog with his chain across his shoulders. And then Hangman throws him over the top rope and Moxley gets entangled with this chain and he gets choked out. And that's the end of the match. When I thought Texas death match, I was thinking like last man standing kind of match, but it was not those rules at all. It was, and I didn't realize what the rules were as I was watching.
Interesting. Cause I missed, apparently Justin Roberts did say by knockout or submission. I missed that because usually I fast forward Wild Thing when his entrance. So I missed that. But they also think they should, when these kind of matches happen, these stipulation matches, do the graphic, right? Let the play-by-play guy go or let the ring announcer say it and show the graphic for everyone at the home and in attendance. So I was very confused because, you know, as a traditionalist of wrestling, like Texas Death means... you know, falls don't count, but after you gain a fall, you got a 10 count to reach your feet, right? Or it's going to be last man standing where you have to just get up by the 10 count, right? It's kind of like what Texas Deathman has now transitioned to last man standing.
Right.
So at the end of it, I was like, wait, well, what? Submission. You know, I was totally confused. And then it was funny because as the match is going on, I'm like, I feel like no one's really doing the count for 10 other than maybe like once or twice, I think it was, right? This match here, not my cup of tea. I wish they just call it a death match, a GCW match, whatever, Big Japan death, whatever you want to freaking call it. Don't call it a Texas death match. Confuse everyone. You know, this match, as I'm watching this match, I started thinking about Texas death matches of the past. Of course, I don't have footage of Dory Funk Sr. versus Psycho Negro, right? All those kind of those classic ones in the Amarillo territory, right? Created by the Funks, Texas death match. But I started thinking about last man standing matches. So I started thinking about Triple H versus Chris Jericho, Fully Loaded. It was a 2000, I believe. And I started thinking about John Cena, Umaga, Royal Rumble 2007. And so I'm like, you know what? Tomorrow before the show, before we record the show, I'm going to watch those two matches, right?
Yeah.
And this is the big difference. In this match with Moxley and Hangman, there's just stuff made. There's boards with barbed wire. There's stuff all around the ring. Triple H and Chris Jericho, Umaga and John Cena, those matches were so far above this match, right? Because they used stuff that was the part of the environment around it, right? They didn't have to. Other than Triple H had a sledgehammer. That was his thing, right?
Yeah.
But he wasn't pulling out kendo sticks, or he didn't have a board or barbed wire, you know, or stuff like that. It was just, you know, there was the ring post, there was the ring guardrails, there was the table, there was the monitor, there's the ring steps when it came to Umaga, and there was a table, but it was the announcer's table that's already out there. And in this match here, it's just like they're just setting up props. And it was to me, the Jungle Boy Christian was better built from the beginning to the end than this match. This match, I felt long for me. And then when you do so much props, so much of the plunder, you know, you're getting chains, you're getting bricks, you're getting boards of barbed wire, and they're surviving all of this for so long, it kind of gets ridiculous, you know? And that's what I felt this match. I didn't say it's not the worst match on the card, because honestly, when I think about it, Wardlow and Samoa Joe probably is the worst match on the show. I totally forgot about that one until I was just, as we're talking about another match.
Oh, yeah, that's next.
Okay, we'll talk about that. But I thought, for me, I just kind of got was sitting there watching this and watching them cut each other up. And it wasn't, to me, it didn't have that it didn't build as well as Jungle Boy and Christian Cage was.
So, you know, the whole reason for this match is, can we rebuild Hangman Page? Is he rebuilt in your eyes based off of this match? Which, to me, as I'm watching this match, I'm like, oh, they're going, we need to, you know, we need to make Hangman a man here. Like, that's like the kind of the match that it was. And, you know, we've been very critical of his struggles since CM Punk match. You know, I don't think we're, you know, this is not a secret in any way. Like, he is definitely degraded as far as being a performer. And I think this is the jump start to get him back, maybe even to the main event level. I don't know if he's going to be MJF's next opponent or not.
Feels
but
like
he did.
That.
He did beat the 3-time champion in his own match. And so, do you think he's rejuvenated? Can you put him at that next level based off of this outcome?
Well, he definitely won. Will he be put back? I think MJF's going to kill him when it comes to promos. I don't think he's that strong to compete with MJF. You know, Brian is a guy you don't think about promos, but you know what? Brian's a pretty good promo and handled himself really well with MJF. I feel Hangman's very weak at promos, and I think he's going to be, when it comes to them going at it, when it comes to Mike, he's going to be slaughtered, and I think the crowd might even babyface MJF in that. So I'm really worried about that. So I don't know. I thought, and I honestly too, like the finish after it was over, I mean, Paige kind of quickly leaves the ring. He didn't soak in the cheers long enough. He should be really soaking in. And honestly, Mox should have been down more. He should have been carried out by Wheeler Yuta and Claudio. But they cut to all I see is there's Moxley hopping the guardrail and leaving. I'm like, he's okay to hop the guardrail and leave? I thought that was pretty unprofessional, honestly. And I would have been upset. If I was Tony Khan, I would have been upset with him about that. And if I was Hangman on Page, I'd be upset with that, dude. You know, getting up and walking out, jumping over a guardrail to walk out that way, it just kind of kill what you try to do with Hangman there. And there could have been a visual of instead of Paige leaving, there could be a nice visual of Yuta and Claudio carrying out their fallen leader who was just in this violent war, right? And then there's Paige standing tall. But we didn't really get that. So I thought that was kind of a failure there. But You'll see again, but I think he is the next challenger for MGF as this, you know, because he did just be, like you said, beat a 3-time champion.
Mm-hmm.
He has to be next. And unless he has something else to somewhere else to do between them, because maybe Adam Cole might be better because he can keep kind of keep up with MGF with the promo stuff. But yep, we'll see. But I think it's going to be Hangman Page. And I, like I said, I worry about the promo battle of the deal.
Yep. Okay, so the only match we haven't talked about is Wardlow and Joe. And I was so sad for these guys because they had to follow the chaos. And I'm sure if you're Tony Khan in your mind, you're like, well, Joe's a vet. He's a professional. He's going to figure out, you know, he's going to feel the crowd and he'll be able to figure out what they have to do. And he'll get Wardlow to follow and they'll be okay. But they were not okay. The crowd, I'm not going to say they despised Wardlow. I don't think that they didn't like him. They clearly like Samoa Joe better than like Wardlow. Mm-hmm. And it just made me harken back to Double or Nothing last year, where Wardlow felt like the hottest guy, you know, or in the one or two or three hottest guys.
Yeah. Yeah. He was, I mean, he's been, we've talked about it almost every week. He's been cooled off. When he showed up at Cow Palace last Wednesday, when we were there live, when he popped up and confronted Samoa Joe at the top of the entranceway and everyone could see him, crickets could have been hurt, you know, for Wardlow. So, and then this match just wasn't clicking. I thought maybe it should have, you know, went the Brock Lesnar, Paul Heyman route of style where it's just high impact, boom, 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 boom. Kept it like short, 3 to 5 minutes. It just, but unfortunately too, Wardlow dropped this elbow right on the ribs of Samoa Joe and either bruised him or maybe knocked the wind out of Samoa Joe. Cause at one point Joe needed some time and the referee said, Oh, get away from him for now. And Joe was, you know, hurting for a while. He recovered, but I think that kind of also hampered a match. But you know, also like we don't want to see Wardlow escape submissions by grabbing the rope. You know, he did that twice. I mean, Goldberg, you don't want to see Goldberg do that, right? Goldberg would have just fucking twisted out of it and got out of it and closing the motherfucker, right? Like,
yeah.
That's what we want with Wardlow and like him grabbing the ropes. I know Joe's a big guy just like him, but he should have powered himself out or reversed it somehow. Or, you know, like I said, I think 3 to 5 minutes, high impact. Then I think what's coming next? What's coming next is Powerhouse Hobbs in Sacramento on Dynamite. Does Hobbs win it there? You just put the belt on Wardlow. Does Wardlow win it for like 2 days or for a few days and then he loses it? How does that really help Hobbs beat a cold guy in Wardlow? If Powerhouse Hobbs wins it on Wednesday, wouldn't you just want him to beat Samoa Joe, who's hotter than Wardlow? I got concerned about that, but I'm hoping Hobbs does win anyways, and I hope this is his. You know what? Shit, I gotta. Yeah, this is what you gotta do. Hobbs wins it. Who challenges him next? Ricky Starks, former partner.
Mm-hmm.
That could be something interesting leading into May, Double or Nothing, right? Yeah, that could definitely help keep Ricky's momentum going. And then Ricky beating Hobbs again, you know, like that could maybe that Hobbs is one crutch, is his old partner, Ricky Starks, you know. And maybe sometime down the line they can reunite again because I still think there's money in them as a twosome, you know.
Yep. All right. Well, we got through it. Just from the live perspective, I've been to the original Double or Nothing live, which was in Las Vegas. Was it 2019, I guess? And then I've been to two All Outs, 2021 and 2022. And I've been to a second Double or Nothing last year as well. So I think this is my fifth AEW pay-per-view. And I think the All Out 2021, because of all the surprises, that felt like a hotter show. But this was a really good live pro wrestling show. And I was so happy leaving that building. Just, you know, you kind of this happens in live sports. Like if you see a really good game, your team gets a win, you kind of leave and you're light on your feet walking out, and you're kind of talking with your friends about what a good time that you had. And that's what we did. You know, me and Paul Fontaine and Darren Chan, we were just like, yeah, this is a good show. We're kind of walking out. Dean was with us too, who's a Patreon subscriber and a good friend of Paul's. And we were just like hopping and skipping, you know, just talking about it on the way to past Oracle Park and then to our cars. So that was a really fun, memorable show. And I'm glad that I went, and hopefully they come back. And, you know, if they do come back, we don't have to run the Cow Palace anymore, because Tony did it. He was able to run that building, and maybe they can run Oakland, or maybe they can run San Jose instead on the Dynamite and draw from a little bit of a different audience and fill that event center. Cause that event center is a great wrestling building.
My vote, San Jose, but I would say this too. I wasn't there live, but after the pay-per-view was over and I watched it late, like I was going to shout out BR Live for getting the replay up, but after I heard Kevin Ely's
he had some
issues
problems
with it, so you know, screw you, BR Live. And so I was able to watch it around 9 o'clock, and I kind of paused a couple times here and there, did some things, but I ended it late, like after 1 o'clock, but I was still jazzed. I felt good, and I started thinking about, man, so far 2023 has been a pretty good year of major wrestling cards. You know, Wrestle Kingdom was good, Royal Rumble was good, Elimination Chamber was very good. Mm-hmm. Even us going to San Jose for New Japan.
Yeah.
Very good show, you know? Fun. So, and then now this one, Revolution. So 2023 looks for a hell of a year for big shows. So let's hope we keep that momentum going for WrestleMania and beyond, you know?
All right. We're going to play the interview that I did with Cal Ross and Liam O'Rourke about Triple H's run in WWE so far, and sort of the highs and lows of just him in his role and in previous roles, and Vince lurking over him. Mustache Vince. And then John and I will come back to wrap up the show. We're bringing on Liam O'Rourke, author of Crazy Like a Fox, one of the best books, wrestling books that I've read, on Brian Pillman. Also, Kyle Ross, a.k.a. The Boss from Top Rope Nation. These two gentlemen do a podcast together. Sell the podcast for 30 seconds here, Kyle.
You want me to? Oh, boy, here we go. So, yes, you mentioned Top Rope Nation, a phenomenal weekly podcast I do with your good friends Ryan Drosty and Justin Joint, two men that we've all hung out together, and Liam
love
knows
you guys
as well. Yes, the three of us do that. But I also do a podcast with Liam. I've known Liam for a very long time. I've actually, 2006 maybe or something?
Yeah, that's 2006.
Let's go with that. And we do a podcast, Squared Circle Gazette. It was a podcast. It's Liam's podcast. And Liam just one day messaged me. He's like, you know, I have all these observer notes on 1990, and there's a great story to be told. And I was like, what if we did a podcast about that? He's like, what, you and me about 1990 WWF? I said, yes. And so we did it, and it was in three parts, and we liked it so much. I said, what if we did 1991? And that was a lot of hard work. And I said, but by God, Liam, we're into the weeds so much. What if we did 1992? And that was a lot of hard work, too. And we just wrapped up, as a matter of fact, just days ago, Liam and I recorded the last part of our look at 1992, starting with Bret Hart's title win through the end of the year. And so we have now covered three full years, the first 3 years, the 1990s WWF over at Squared Circle Gazette. They are long shows. I will give people a heads up now. They are 3 hours in length, every episode, basically. You don't have to listen to it all at once, but by God, you have to listen to it.
Okay, so the reason why I wanted the both of you on. Now we did another, you know, it was actually 30 some odd minutes on WCW 96 stuff for my Patreon. If people want to hear more from these guys after you listen to this, patreon.com/fightgamemedia. So the reason why I wanted to bring you guys on, because I've had this theory. Well, I do enjoy this time frame of WWE more than previous years, and way more than like 2 or 3 and 4 years ago. I think this version of WWE, what they're doing, is much better because they have hotter characters. The programs feel hotter. I've sensed that there's a little bit of Emperor's New Clothes with Triple H here, in that a lot of the benefit of the doubt that Triple H gets is just because he's not a giant dick like Vince McMahon is. Right? Like, I mean,
certainly one way to put it, yes.
And that's like, I grew up a fan of Vince McMahon, but all of this information that comes out about him that, you know, probably a lot of people secretly did know, like, he's just not a good dude, right? Like, that's just ultimately what it is. And so when you have Triple H coming in and he, the face of him and how he speaks and everything, he's coming in like the nice guy, like the good guy. And so when the fan base goes, oh, we got rid of the old man, and now here's the guy who we watched our entire careers as WWF fans, WWE fans. Like, it just feels fresher. It feels better. It feels like you're supporting something that is not terrible or not bad or is not immoral, right? So, the reason why I say this is because if I think about what the things that I really like about WWE right now, they were all kicked off by Vince, and Triple H just kind of had to run with the playbook. If I think about all the things that I don't like about WWE right now, these are all people that Triple H brought back that Vince had fired, right?
Yes.
And so now to some fans, maybe they do love Dexter Lumis. Oh, great guy. You know, he's been around forever. He gets a shot on the big... But to me, it's like...
Show yourself if you think that, by the way.
Yeah, sure. But there might be a few.
Email Garrett if you really believe that.
But am I leaning more towards how you guys feel about this? Or do you actively think that even what's going on in WWE... it's just not different than what it was. And I'll let Kyle go first.
Yeah, I just want to say this real quick because I know Liam Goff. My co-host on Top Rope Nation, Justin Joint, I thought made the perfect analogy with this change from Triple H or from Vince McMahon to Triple H. Triple H essentially inherited a mansion that had a lot of dog poop on the front yard. And Triple H, what he's been doing, he's picked up the dog crap off the front yard. We don't get those really hideous, unfunny skits so much anymore. But to your point, and I'm sure Liam is going to then take the ball and run wild with this, I don't think it's that different. I do think Vince got the ball rolling with a lot of this stuff. He and all the good stuff that you see, yes, Triple H inherited. As a matter of fact, Liam, I believe we did a podcast where we said Triple H wouldn't be all that different.
We did. We predicted. We saw, because again, like, I think that a big part of this, the Emperor's New Clothes is such an appropriate term. This has already happened with Triple H and NXT, where the belief, it's guilt-free acceptance of the company, because you've known for the last 20 years, as things have not been going so great for WWE creatively speaking, that like, okay, well, it's Vince, but everything that's wrong, it's Vince. Triple H comes along, he kind of, you know, he does NXT, which for a long time helped his perception greatly, until, you know, it kind of all fell apart there at the end in quite spectacular fashion. But when he comes in, like you say, it's like, okay, now it's going to allow us to kind of believe that things are different. And even though there's not that many things that actually are different, other than some of the faces have returned, yeah, I think that it's a pretty telling situation that we have here, where the thing is too, it's like, it'd be one thing if it was just the current audience, but the audience is developing and the audience is great and they're doing well in terms of ticket sales and stuff like that. So there are signs that this is not just the same people watching and saying, oh, well, now it's great. It's like, well, to various degrees and various metrics, things are working better.
It also should be noted, Triple H, and this was smart of him, I thought it was transparent. I'm sure you guys picked up on it. It's funny that the last guy who seemingly picked up on it was Vince McMahon himself. Triple H was using NXT to white knight himself. Absolutely. Vis-a-vis Vince. The whole thing was like, he totally laid into like the better than Raw, better than SmackDown chants. And that was the whole thing. And then, like, you know, Vince one day, I think, realized what was going on there and got very angry about it and started just smacking all the NXT people around that would come up. And it looked like Triple H was done, right? Until he wasn't, and then was in charge of the company. Very interesting, that timeline of events, by the way.
So it's, I mean, right on what you said, because I think Vince was pretty jealous of the praise that Triple H would get, right? Because there's a moment where it looks like Triple H is going to be the successor. And then Vince goes, oh, no, I'm not going anywhere. And in fact, I'm bringing back these older guys who were here with me before. Bruce Pritchard, Johnny Ace, before Johnny Ace got let go. But and Triple H kind of got demoted, right? Mm-hmm. It was almost to say, look, you're not a genius. I'm the genius. You're learning under me. And I'll say when you get, you know, it's kind of like he put him in his place, which I found to be very interesting. But understanding some of the corporate, you know, machinations that as I do, I get it at the same time, because it is really power is ultimately about the struggle and who stays on top. And Vince is unwilling to leave. Still today, he is unwilling to leave after having some of the worst public press of anyone.
He don't care, man. He's since, old and he thinks
since Donald whatever. Trump, right? Yeah, like this, yeah, like yeah. And they remove him. Now what do you think about this? He wants to come back, and this is not that long ago. And Triple H, Nick Khan, and Stephanie all vote no. And then he forces mm-hmm. his way back in, and then they have to vote yes, right? Like, they have to be okay with it. Like, that is crazy.
Yeah, I love this. I love this. What a great chess game we've got going on here. So yeah. The one thing that's interesting, the Triple H demotion, lest we forget. And actually, this is a really interesting thing, because it dates back to something as we're talking, not to completely just plug our show that we're doing on 1991, 1992 incessantly here, but...
No, I want to hear it, because you guys are doing the research.
This is classic Vince, in the sense that anything that's happened over the course of Vince's run from the 90s onwards that was something that appealed to wrestling fans more than his perception of what the wider audience is. Things like Ric Flair coming from the other side and being treated as an equal to Hogan, not so much in the way that he does it. There are certain things that Vince, I feel, he has this blocker. If it appeals to one segment of the audience, it has an inability to appeal beyond that. And when he put NXT against AEW, which was Vince's decision, not Triple H's.
Yes. Yes.
Vince made a critical error in that he put NXT in a war that he could lose. And they did, severely. And as a result, to me, that was Vince's, okay, I'm right. My idea of this thing that you have been cultivating and building for years, we put that on a national television stage against this, and it got its ass kicked. So that what you are doing, Hunter, is not going to work. So it was almost like this kind of, and we know that the classic thing with Vince, he wants to compete with anybody, even if it's in a situation where the chicks are already stacked in his favor. So of course, hey, Hunter, no, you're not going to get it, because we gave you the chance, and my instinct on what you're doing is correct, because you failed.
I want to go back even further, because I believe that when Vince did the thing where he added Bischoff and Heyman as the general managers, you guys remember that short-lived, short-lived time when he tried to create this, you know, this thing. I asked Dave Meltzer, I go, okay, Triple H, Vince thinks this is going to suck, and thus he can blame Bischoff, he can blame Heyman, and that's fine. But if you put Triple H in here and it sucks, then publicly, when Triple H does eventually have to take over, he's already got one failure under his thing. So that I believe that was why Triple H was not put in one of those roles. But then the strategy had to have changed because of what you just said, which is he put Triple H in that spot of AEW versus NXT, unless he just outright did not think that they could lose.
Okay. This is the key question with that.
Go for
was, it. Did Vince do that? Was he naive and thinking NXT would win, or did he want Hunter to fail?
I think he wanted NXT to win. I think that he thought AEW was going to appeal to the same audience as NXT, but NXT had the WWE power behind it. They had the advertising. I think he thought it was the perfect one to go against them.
Do you also think he knew next to nothing about NXT?
Absolutely.
Yeah.
Absolutely.
It's fascinating.
I don't think he was paying. That's like the fascinating thing, is that while Triple H is white knighting himself at Vince's expense down at NXT, I don't think Vince was. I think he was doing other things. You remember he was trying to get like the XFL going, and there was lots of. I don't think he was. I think he was napping, and then he realized it, and that's when he laid the smackdown, so to speak, on Triple H.
Now,
and then all of a sudden Vince wasn't in power anymore. That's very odd.
And so in some ways, you know, being a leader and, yeah, and you're sort of on top of it, delegating and going, okay, I trust you to take this. I trust you to take this. Like, I think those are good qualities in a leader. But when you're so out of it, you have no idea what's going on. And you're actually putting this guy out here to who's going to be the heir apparent, supposedly. And he is currently, unless Vince just comes back and moves him back down again. But you cannot set your people up to fail. And that's what he did with AEW. Now, maybe he did think that, well, we have the better marketing, you know, USA is behind us. You know, we're going to figure out a way and you know, we're going to play some dirty business and tell TNT that the stuff, you know, not needed. We'll give you guys a digital show or something, you know, whatever he was going to do. But that was just a major error. He was like, he just had his eye off the ball, you know, like you said. And, you know, that whole aspect of this whole thing, where we are today with Triple H, and we'll bring it back here to current, is a fascinating sort of ride. Someone's going to need to maybe Dave's upcoming observer yearbooks on like 19 and 20 and 21, or we'll tell that story. But so let's go back to current, because they had one of the hottest angles that they have ever had, and definitely in recent memory with Roman Reigns and Sami Zayn and this bloodline thing. And the way that they got out of that was to beat Sammy on a big pay-per-view. And even further, they just beat Sammy on SmackDown with Solo Sikoa. So they have,
and in Toronto,
you know, they're making sure that Cody is here, and they're making sure that the fans really understand that Sammy is really here, even though the fans want him to possibly be an equal or maybe even higher than Cody. This is definitely a WWE sort of play, right? The little guy, the ugly guy, he can never get over. We have the blonde, blue-eyed guy with the muscles, and he's going to be the one.
Tattoo.
Yeah, exactly. Like, what was your take? And we'll go, Liam, we'll go you first. What was your whole take on just the way that they did that? It's like, we've seen this before. Zack Ryder gets over. He's not who we want to get over, right? Daniel Bryan gets over. Oh, CM Punk left. Okay, we'll let Daniel Bryan, you know, get over to an extent. They did the same thing with Rey Mysterio. Fans wanted Rey. Vince is like, okay, I'm going to give you Rey, and then I'm going to kill his title run to show you how wrong you guys were, right? This is the WWE playbook. What was your whole take on this bloodline storyline and how we are to where we are right now?
Yeah, it's a really interesting deal, because this. To be honest, the success of WWE right now is a pyramid bouncing on the head of this storyline, the way I see it. And not just with Sammy, but obviously the Cody situation and Roman. It's about the top guys. Right. That's why things are going better for them with ticket sales and stuff like that. It's all around this. As much, and this is why, like, you know, I have a lot of angst against the way WWE does things. And this is one of them where, like, they actually, even though they created this situation over the course of months, that was a well-told story that had these points that its audience lapped up and they wanted to pay money to see the result that they want to see at the end of this story, for a story they had absolutely zero intention of delivering what they were trying to get the audience to want in the first place, and booked it at a time in February where they can't win. No matter what they do, if they give Sammy the win in Montreal, it's awesome. But then they got nothing set up for WrestleMania other than like a Cody Rhodes, three-way, a babyface match. You know, it's like, it's messy. And I understand the idea. Well, the WrestleMania tickets are sold and all of that. But the whole point is, the whole idea of delivering on this story is going forward. What do you have? What's next? That's going to be the key here. Business is going to be good up to WrestleMania. I'm not surprised. The fact that business has not been like this for several years is an indictment of the past several years, as you've said, Garrett, in terms of things not upticking towards this period of time of the year. I think that the fact that it's doing well now does speak to the success of the story, but it was done in such a way where they were never going to give the audience what they wanted. They knew that from the beginning, and they also positioned it at such a time where the fans were going to have to eat it. And the current nature of the fan base is they will eat it and they will see what's next, and that's okay. And as long as, you know, they get the numbers they want for WrestleMania viewing figures, I you know, and they, I mean, I'm interested now in what they do, because to me, it's not so much about what they do for the next month, but from April onwards for the rest of the year. If there's Cody, if they give it to Cody, does Cody work away from Roman? Because Roman's not going to be around for most of the summer, I wouldn't imagine. So what happens there? And does would that be better than what than had Sammy been in this position and Sammy had the summer? Because again, if Roman's not around and the story's not in play, it's kind of hard. So there's so many elements to this, but so much of it to me, my overwhelming takeaway is just that not much has changed in the way they execute stories, because this was something that even when, and again, you can tell it's Roman and Heyman who are so responsible for what we're seeing. And of course it's been approved by other people and I understand that, but at the same time, it's like, this was always going to end one way. And it's a way that basically just tells the audience, thanks for wasting your time for the last few months. Now it's time to do what we actually want to do.
Okay. So I want to go back. Like, I think the one thing that is different about WWE just recently than what it has been over the last decade is that it does have an identity. Like I think everybody is on board with what they want to do. And I'll double back to that, what I think they may want to do and end up doing through WrestleMania in a minute. But you look back at like the previous decade of WWE, it really is a promotion with an identity crisis. The first half of the 2010s are like, you had these WrestleManias that did incredible numbers, right? With Rock and Cena at the forefront. But underneath that, you had the stuff that you mentioned, Punk and Bryan, stuff that Vince begrudgingly went along with. Like, he had to do
the audience is
the audience demanded it. Like, Punk, you know, causes a brief spike in interest. In the case of Daniel Bryan, the alternative just stunk.
Yeah,
and they had nothing else, and they and like anybody would have gone with Daniel Bryan in that situation.
Batista and Randy Orton, the main event at WrestleMania.
And then the second half of the 2010s, you have an identity crisis where they want to build around somebody, but the audience is like, "No, we don't want you to build around this person as a babyface." That being Roman Reigns.
Yes.
Then they once they figured out how to present Roman Reigns properly, this promotion, whether you like it or you're maybe like us, you're not as keen on it, like week to week and stuff, it definitely changed. And that's when like it just had a top down, a trickle down effect on the rest of the promotion. This promotion has a clear identity with Roman Reigns at the top, and everyone's just kind of no one disputes who, like, until like the Sammy deal, there was no dispute that Roman Reigns should have been the world champion, right? Like, no one ever, like, sometimes people are like, maybe Drew should go over, but then everyone just moves past that, right? And it'll be interesting to see what they do with Sammy. And that brings me to WrestleMania and the topic at hand. How confident, because everyone keeps saying, oh, well, they want Cody and we're going to and we're going to make sure everyone understands Cody is higher than Sammy. Cody is great. Sammy, you thought he was great, but hey, he's not that. He's not as great as Cody. How confident are we that Cody Rhodes is winning at WrestleMania?
Okay, here's my confidence. So my confidence level is based solely on one thing. They're in a wrestling war. They would love to bring over some of AEW's wrestlers. Kenny Omega, I think, being A1 right now. Their best recruiting tool to AEW is to have Cody Rhodes win at WrestleMania. That is my point. There's other people who say, oh, Roman has to have the 1,000 days and then Cody can win at the next show. I think he's got to win at WrestleMania because WWE is a mark for themselves when it comes to this WrestleMania moment, right? They tell the fans this is the most important thing every year. So if Cody loses, I mean, we might be, you know, Lex Luger 1993.
Here. Oh, it's such a degree.
Yeah. But
where's the balloons?
Then they may say, well, we'll make it up at this King of the Ring show that they're doing or whatever, and then Cody can win there. To me, I think that's a mistake. Even SummerSlam, even saving the win for SummerSlam, I think is a giant mistake. Roman and the Bloodline have done so much to put the eyeballs on this storyline. We need a payoff. And I think the longer that Cody waits, the longer we get to hear these promos where he's using all these $10 words when a 50-cent word for the audience is necessary, the emotion that he people are going to get tired of that at some point.
Yeah.
And so I think you do it now, you get the Cody run, and then you figure out what the fan base thinks of him by SummerSlam, and then you figure out where you go for the next year's WrestleMania. But to tell the AEW locker room, MJF, Kenny Omega, the Bucks, whatever, hey, we can actually do what you guys have been doing in AEW. We can shine that spotlight on you better than AEW even can. And here's how we're going to do it. Look at where Cody was this time last year or 2 years ago versus where he is now. He's on top of the world. He's the number one wrestler in the game right now. And that's how they see it. That's not going to work on Moxley. That's not going to work on Danielson. They've been there before. For the people who haven't been there before, maybe even like a Wardlow. A Wardlow probably fits better in WWE than he does in AEW. Like, they will go, oh, that's how they see. That's how we can be presented on that show. That's why I think they got to do it.
The dangling carrot. Yeah, I think just the day, because I know Kyle's going to hit the ground running here in a second. I can see him gearing up. Just on, before we hit this point on the timing of Cody winning, which I think is actually like a really, really interesting topic. The reason why things are better and why there's an identity to this company in the first place is because they actually did what the audience was telling them to do for years with Roman. They actually listened to the organic. And this is why, again, like I say, my angst with WWE for years, it was the same. If the audience is telling you something...
He sells t-shirts, Liam.
Hey, I can see that he sells t-shirts. He's selling a lot more fucking tickets now than he was t-shirts then, I'm sure.
Yeah.
So, but this is the deal though, isn't it? It's like, you actually listen to the organic... business turns around when you listen to the organic inclinations of your audience. Well, here's the organic inclinations of the audience with Sami Zayn, and we're just going to ignore that one. The organic inclination of this audience for this story is Cody pulls the sword out of the stone at WrestleMania. And like you say, the longer this story, if he fails at WrestleMania, after this whole thing of I'm going to win the belt for my dad and really hitting the dusty thing hard, and if he doesn't win, what's he got to come back with? It's going to say, yeah, but this time I'll do it. And the thing is, the audience, they'll probably just accept it and take it anyway.
Yes!
So, you know, that's it. It's like, and this is where my heart for WWE just drops sometimes, is it's like, even if I want to buy into it, I just know that in the end, that will happen. And even if that doesn't happen and they actually do roll with the punches and they create something good like Roman, it's like, if they do get it wrong, the wheel keeps turning. It's not going to, there is no desire or need to get things completely perfectly right, because the infrastructure of the company is so good that it's almost impossible for them to fail.
Can I, before we get to Kyle, I want to ask one small thing about what you just said.
Yeah.
This may be Triple H's only WrestleMania that he's ever going to book, right? We don't know that. No, and I'm not saying that awesome. As a diss to him. I'm saying that because what if the company gets sold, right?
Yeah, yeah.
Like, true. So I do think...
We'll get the fake Yokozuna next year.
I do think he wants to put his stamp on this show as a way to say, I did this thing correctly, and mm-hmm. business was up, not only because Vince set the table, but because I did the things right as well. So... I think you're right in most years, but I do think he wants to put his signature on this thing, and the signature is going to be, he wants people to come out of this thing as like, man, Triple H did a great job with this story.
Yeah, I think there's probably truth to that. I think that this is so much of what we're seeing is about perception at the minute. That's why Dexter Lumis got the call in the first place, I'm sure. But yeah, I think there's truth to that. And that's the thing. It's like, but come WrestleMania, does this head of the board, Vinny, swoop in? And
very true.
He wants, because it's more important to him than ever for the stock price to be up, for things to be swimming along. And if he believes the right thing is not what Hunter believes is the right thing for his own interest, who's going to win?
Yeah, does he, your point is well taken, Garrett, what you said about making AEW... or making WWE like a destination for AEW wrestlers. Like, certainly putting the title on Goldberg, Cody Rhodes would shine a light on that. But, you know, at the same time, you know, you brought up Vince in the 90s, Liam, earlier. And like, part of me always like thinks, like, Vince doesn't want to put over a guy who left him and went to AEW. He wants to like smack him at the worst possible moment. That's like right out of the Vince McMahon playbook. And, you know, we say that, and you mentioned the obedient audience that they have. I think that's also very important to point out with WWE.
Yes.
Since AEW came about, I think the more rebellious element of that we saw
it's
in
gone.
The buildings, it's gone. because they just watched AEW more now. And so the WWE audience doesn't complain about the booking so much anymore. So that being said, I think we can all look forward to WrestleMania when Cody gets a count out win in the balloons.
I hope
just
so.
Like Lex Luger. How great would that be? I'll call you. God. I don't care if it's 5 a.m. UK.
Wait, but you.
I will call you if Cody gets a count out win in balloons.
You know where SummerSlam is this year?
In Detroit, yeah, dude.
On the 30th anniversary of that show.
Yeah. The Motor City, God. Ironically enough, where the Lex Express broke down for the last time.
He crisscrossed this great country of ours.
You know, they did that Lex A&E biography, and they just showed how miserable he really was as a babyface.
The thing with Lex is that I'm not like an Anakta guy. I mean, I wouldn't like be like, you know, like chomping at the bit to like go town to town shaking hands with fans, but like he hated doing that.
Yeah, and at that point, was
thing, yeah.
At that point, he wasn't a natural babyface in that way. Yeah. You know, he wanted to go lift weights and he wanted to watch his diet, and that's what he cared about the most. Yeah. Okay, last question. But no, you had something else to say. Go ahead.
The buy rate of SummerSlam 93 actually justifies Lex not going over. I just think they made him look like a complete ass by celebrating like we had just won the war with balloons when he wins by countout.
Dude, it's Road Warriors 87 Starcade for me all over again.
Yes.
Like, I was so disappointed. And then I'm like, why are these geeks celebrating? They know the rules. Like, they just lost this match.
Yeah, like I'm 13 years old. I'm like, dude, I know he didn't win the title. Are you trying to like act like I don't know that he's not
and
the
they
champion?
Sold it in the build that it's his only chance.
Yes.
He fucking loses.
All right, last question, because I think this is a big part of what they're doing with Roman Reigns here, which is, do you think he can successfully turn babyface and be the babyface that they had always wanted him to be based off of this character? And I'll let you go first, Kyle.
He's already kind of there, isn't he? Like, I think they actually, if they want him to be babyface, I don't think they need to change the character. Like, just have him start working heels, because like he comes out and does the acknowledge me bit and the crowd is into that.
Yeah.
You know, it's so funny because this company, you know, one of the hallmarks of its sort of what I'll call, and some people may get very mad at this, that's okay, I'm a big boy, I could take it, but like a 20-year decline creatively is an inability to book baby faces.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
Steve Austin and The Rock rewrote the rules of what was a cool baby face.
Not to cut you off, but AEW currently has the same problem.
Yes, all wrestling has it, because they like people like think baby faces still need to be nice and like, you know, like good but it's not true. Like there are people who will go back. I see this all the time. People who do Raw reviews like, oh man, The Rock was kind of a real asshole. Yes, but people liked that.
You just have to get over on the heel.
Okay. Yes. Yep. Yes.
They like you're an asshole to the right person. Yeah.
Yes. Hogan, the same thing in Hogan. People are like, oh, Hogan was a real, you know, he kind of did want Miss Elizabeth. I can see why Sam was like,
lust Hogan.
But people in the '80s didn't care. They just liked Hulk Hogan.
And jealous people, eyes for sure.
People just people now all see Reigns as the star they all wanted him to be. So he's already kind of there, to be honest. Like, the worst thing they could do is change, is if they wanted him to be a babyface, would be to make any change to this character. Because say what you will about Roman Reigns, I think Roman Reigns has always been a very talented wrestler.
Me too.
He was just one of the worst booked top babyfaces ever. They knew the crowd didn't really like him, and then he would do what we were just talking about with Cody. He would fail in every big spot. So everyone's like, oh, we don't like this guy, and he's a loser? Oh, what a winning combo this is. He's a badass. He's like,
he wins all the time.
And he wins all the time, and presto, everybody likes him. Wow, what an incredible concept.
You take a cool guy, and you give him a milquetoast personality, and you expect that to work. And just let him be a cool guy. And that's what he is right now. He's a cool guy. Just someone that's like, I could have a drink with Roman, you know?
Yeah, exactly.
But before, you know, when he's doing his babyface stuff, you're like, this guy, I don't know if I'd want to hang out with him.
You mentioned earlier about enjoying WWE now more than you had the previous couple of years. 2015 to 2020, WWE is arguably the biggest waste of time.
Yeah, it's terrible.
Like nothing any wrestling. Well, no, because you look back at it, because it's what Liam said. We all wanted Roman to turn, and they like fought the odd. No, he's not. He's good. Vince is like, I'm going to find the right moment, and I'm going to be right. He's going to get this classic babyface reaction, and it never worked. And then they did the thing everyone said they should do 5 years earlier, and it worked.
You know, the most underrated part of this whole thing, if COVID doesn't happen, we may not get it, right? Because Roman had to go away. He got sick. He had to go away because of COVID, because of his immune system. And then they're like, okay, like he's been gone for a while. Now we switch the character and he comes back and it's kind of genius. But it's also a real world thing that if it doesn't happen, we may not have this version of Roman.
Except they turned him heel during the Thunderdome era. That was the oddest thing to me when there was no one around.
There's been every show piping in crowd reactions. You can finally get him cheered by just pressing a button and they turn him heel.
And it was the oddest thing too, because it wasn't really a heel turn when he first did it. But then like all the people who are like in the co-opted media with the blue check marks, not you, Ryan Droste, but like all the people with the blue check marks next to their name who are co-opted media, like were like, that was a heel turn. I'm like, it was? And then like I turned on the TV the next week. I'm like, okay, I guess that was a heel turn.
Yeah.
Hilarious.
Gaslighting mob boss Roman Reigns is... so much more. Again, like, the thing is, this stuff feeds on itself. If you have, okay, so this babyface who we're trying to push with the milquetoast personality, the crowd's not getting into him, so we don't want to pull the trigger because we don't want the backlash, so we won't go too hard on it, which means that he looks like a loser and a geek who, and he's playing anyway. So, like, of course it builds the resistance. And again, it's like the entire structure of what the wrestling business is listening to the audience and reacting to it and adjusting what you're doing accordingly. And when they finally do, it's working. And that's why this upcoming month is such a fascinating study in the current brains.
Yes.
We
may have to come back in the summer to see how this all shook out. But hey, this was awesome. This is what I'm going to do. I have downloaded your show before. And then I kind of get intimidated by the length and I go, oh, like, because I'm a complete, like, I like to, if I start something, I like to finish it. Wow. And so I'm like, this is so hard. But what I'm going to do is I'm driving to Tucson to see my kid. I'm not flying because the flights are ridiculous. Not that I can't afford. I just don't want to afford this flight. It's so ridiculous. So I think I'm going to drive. And so that's like, 12 hours one way. So I have to Tucson and back home. And I think I'm going to make sure that I get through the 90s stuff with you guys. Cause you guys have such great chemistry. I could tell, it comes across that you guys like each other as people. So go listen to their show. I'll put the link to the Apple podcast feed in the show notes here, but you guys are great. And we'll have to revisit this cause this was a lot of fun. All right, we're back. We're going to end the show here. We will be back on our normal time, Thursday night, Friday morning. And we're going to talk about what happened on Raw tonight. Now, I haven't seen it yet.
Wait, what?
It's still going on on the West Coast as we're recording, but I will watch it before we're live, pal. But they culminated the Sami Zayn and Jey Uso storyline here.
Oh, okay. Raw. That's cool. Well, I mean, that makes sense. I mean, we're getting close to WrestleMania. I don't think that's good. So, the only thing I saw was the old John Cena, Word Life, it hugged Cody Rhodes.
Did he?
I just saw a picture of them hugging.
Yeah, so I gotta watch it. I usually save Raw for early in the morning to watch it before we're live, pal. But so I'll be able to watch it. But we'll talk about it because that is. It's the best storyline that WWE's had in a while, and I want to talk about it and just sort of, discuss kind of like where they started, how high they got, and now where they're going. If they're going to be able to keep Sami Zayn as a hot baby face throughout this whole thing. So,
and I know you've seen enough wrestling the last years this whole week now, but I just watched David Finlay and Ishii from the Cup. It was a tremendous
match. From the Japan Cup.
And it's a pretty big match because this is David Finlay's first match as a top guy now, as putting that position. And we'll see if he gets to that Jay White level.
I'll try and make sure to watch those as well. I watched the first night of the Cup. So, we did the greatest New Japan Cup bracket of all time. And we're already done. Bracket's busted. El Phantasmo lost to Naito. We're done. And Sonata.
Oh, you thought
Sonata
El Phantasmo was going to beat Naito?
Yeah.
Oh, I've never I'm just waiting for El Phantasmo to just get the night out. That one guy's one of those guys that just doesn't connect with me for some reason.
There was a feeling in the air that he was kind of on his way with this show or with this tournament. But you know who he looks like? He looks like if Logan Paul like didn't lift any weights. That's what he looks like. His character. He's got the long hair. He's got the long hair and you know the blondish hair. I was like, man, this dude looks like Logan Paul.
Looks like Smeagol with hair to me. I don't know what it is. Just weird looking guy.
All right, so we'll be back. Like I mentioned, if you want to hear more from Kyle and Liam and us talking about Brian Pillman, come to the Patreon. And you know, also with the Patreon, you get a free if you connect your Discord to your Patreon, you will automatically join our Discord. You know, we've had to pull back on the reins a little bit because we've had some bad faith people try and you know ruin our game here in the Discord. People tweeting, people mad.
Yeah, I'm not posting anything. Let's get. I thought it was the open place. I could be kind of open, but I don't know now. I got to keep the.
Yeah, so we're locking the invites and
yeah,
you know if you're a Patreon subscriber, you get automatically included and it's you know if you're a listener and just send me an email ggfightgamemedia.com and I'll send you an invite. But yeah, you know we had to boot a few people here. You know I just quickly hit the ban hammer and just scoot them out. So, but you know that doesn't happen a lot. There's mostly really really cool people in the Discord. There's a few stragglers who want to puff out their chests until they get hit with the ban hammer. All right, so we'll be back on Thursday night, Friday morning with our normal show. So you get twice as much of us. I don't know if that's a good thing, but for John, I'm Double G. We'll see you when we see you. Peace out.